Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve post-game show. With Dave Minuk, with Ezra Ginsberg, I am your host, Drew Mandel, talking about game one, round one, between the Winnipeg Jets and the Edmonton Oilers. A 4-1 victory for the Winnipeg Jets. The game-winning goal coming from an unlikely source in Dominic Toninato, his first of the season for the Winnipeg Jets, just in the lineup simply because of injuries to the Winnipeg Jets forward group. He comes through big time for a guy who spent the vast majority of the year on the taxi squad. A very tidy victory by the Jets, 4-1. And the Jets were quick to say before the game that the regular season and what happened in the regular season versus this Edmonton Oilers team wasn't going to carry over into the playoffs. And they certainly flipped the script and ruined the narrative with tonight's game one victory. Gentlemen, nice to see you both. Dave Minuk, who does not have a fire picture behind him. Nope. So that's a little bit different.
No, I listened to the audience. The audience told me, they said, it's enough of the fire. We're in a warm part of the season, so it's time to get rid of the fire pick. So the fire is gone, and we're now in tranquil river territory.
There you go, tranquil river territory. Very nice. Ezra Ginsberg is down below. Ezra, good to see you on this Wednesday evening.
What's going on,
the
boys?
Jets. Well, I'll tell you what, that was a very tidy victory by the Winnipeg Jets. 4-1. They're without, of course, Pierre-Luc Dubois. They're without Nikolaj Ehlers, but they don't skip a beat. They probably play their most complete game of the season against the Edmonton Oilers in terms of certainly the defensive structure and their, as we talked about on Saturday's preview show, the attention to detail. But very impressive for the Winnipeg Jets. They feel good about themselves with tonight's victory.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned, Drew, like the obvious narrative going into this game was that, you know, the Jets had lost the 7 games out of 9. And, you know, could they shut down Connor McDavid, right? And obviously they did that tonight. And McDavid was noticeable, right, guys? Like, even if he doesn't get on the score sheet, like with his speed and skill, you know, he's going to make a difference out there. But, you know, one of the weirdest things I thought about this game is just how much of it was played at 5-on-5, right? Like, Oilers get the one power play. It's really rare that you only have one power play in a game. And for the most part, you know, I thought, you know, the Jets were pretty even with the Oilers. The obvious, you know, middle frame guys, the Jets were really just weathering the storm there. But, yeah, you know, the first period, they clearly came out with a plan to be physical. You know, we saw Derek Forbort all over Leon Draisaitl. Like, Adam Lowry was throwing his weight around. Logan Stanley was throwing his weight around. But the story of this game has to be, as you mentioned, Drew, Dominic Toninato. You know, we thought it probably was going to be Jansen Harkins. But, you know, as Dave talked about, you know, leading up to the first game, you know, Toninato finished strong with the move. He only played the 3 games. But just a great story, right, for a guy that, you know, didn't start the season off healthy, right, because he was on the COVID-19 list. And then, you know, he ends up playing a few games at the end of the season. So, you know, good for him. And, you know, just, you know, on that goal that we thought went to Logan Stanley initially, but we didn't even think it was a goal. Then obviously Toninato with just a, you know, a beautiful tip. And Nate Thompson picks up a couple assists. And that's what happens, guys, in the playoffs, right? Like, we talk about it every year, not just, you know, for the Jets, but any team. It seems like, you know, the unlikely heroes always seem to step up. So it's only one game, but that's what you wanted to do, right? You wanted to put the pressure on the Oilers, and now the pressure is on the Oilers. They have to win game two, or it's going to be very difficult for them to win the series. We know that if you go down 2 games, I mean, the likelihood of you winning 4 or 5 games is really low. So, you know, and we have to throw in that obviously Connor Hellebuck wasn't going to lose his birthday. So overall, he was pretty solid. He didn't need to steal the game, but, you know, what did he make? 34 saves, 35 saves, Dave. So overall, a pretty good performance for the birthday boy.
I'm sure that the Jets fans would like it to be like Ken Weeb when every day is Kenny's birthday. So maybe it'll be every day it'll be Connor Hellebuck's birthday if that's the performance that he's going to put forth for the Winnipeg Jets. Certainly a tidy effort by the Jets. You know, and prior to the series starting, I was on with our buddy Dave Jamieson this afternoon, and we basically said it almost boiled. A bit of a name drop, you know, no big deal. But, you know, we said almost, you said you at the outset, it's almost if Connor Hellebuck is better in the series, then Connor McDavid, the Jets have a pretty good chance.
Yep.
And certainly Connor Hellebuck was the better of the two tonight. Of course, you know, it's not the easiest comparison, a goaltender versus a forward. But, you know, if the Jets get goaltending like that from Connor Hellebuck in the course of this series, they're probably going to be in a pretty decent place, you know, at the end of however many games it goes.
Yeah, and what have we said all along? We said that Connor Hellebuck will be the most important player for the Winnipeg Jets. More important than Mark Scheifele, more important than Nikolaj Ehlers, more important than Pierre-Luc Dubois. Connor Hellebuck is the lifeblood of this Winnipeg Jets team. So, and I don't think anybody who watches this team, and we know everybody in the chat, by the way, kudos to everybody smashing that like button. We've got over 300 of you already in here. Everybody smashing the like button. We appreciate that.
After a playoff game, Dave, we want to see like twice as many likes at least, right?
I mean, if we don't get to like 500 likes tonight, I'm very disappointed.
I was thinking 1,000, but yeah, we'll 500 too.
We're only 6 minutes in right now. We're plus 100, so I like that number. But we're going to keep this thing rolling. So I'm looking forward to that number jumping up. So to me, again, like I said, throughout the course of the season and specifically the kind of the lead up to this playoff series, we really talked about it. It's going to be, what can Connor Hellebuck do? And will he be the guy who's going to be that difference maker? And again, he's the most important player on this team. There really is nobody else who really, you know, the team lives and dies with Connor Hellebuck. And based on the way he's kind of locked in, that's a good thing for this Winnipeg Jets team. And that, because you need it. Connor McDavid, I liked what the Jets did. I like the way Neil Pionk played. And if you remember the first couple of games of the series, and I know Paul Maurice wants to throw away the regular season, but don't you remember in those first few games, Neil Pionk seemed to be like almost like a shadow of Connor McDavid. Whenever Connor McDavid was there, Neil Pionk was there. And they went away from that a little bit, and they went back to it tonight. And it was good. And I saw one of the guys, I think it was Jamie McLennan, was talking about how they're going to have to almost Esatikin in, you know, McDavid a little bit. And it's kind of the way they did it. Like Pionk was really physical with them. We saw that altercation, whatever you want to call it, after the first period where the teams came together and there was some not really significant action. But the point is that Neil Pionk was in Connor McDavid's face every opportunity he had. And they took away time and space. And again, that's what if you're the Jets, you have to do. You can't allow the Oilers to set up shop and have ownership of time and space. And they didn't let him do it. They forced him to make some plays. Second period wasn't great. But again, overall, you kind of got a chance to remove what the Oilers are really good at, and it allowed you to be opportunistic, and that's what I thought the Jets did.
You won a low-scoring game, right, boys? Like, we knew that without Ehlers and without Dubois, I mean, it was going to be tough for the Jets to win one of those kind of 4-3, 5-4 games, right? And I agree. And the save that stands out to me, guys, is the save on Ethan Bear that Hellebuck made shortly before Toninato got the tip-in goal. You know, he made a really solid save. Bear had a chance, and it was just like one of those point blank saves. And Hellebuck, you know, that could have easily, you know, gone the other way, and the Oilers could have had the 2-1 lead, right? And then obviously, you know, the Scheifele, Connor Wheeler line, they get the empty net goals. But you're right, Dave. I mean, the second period was pretty one sided, right? I think that the Jets only had one shot in the first 10 minutes, if I'm not mistaken, something like that, one or two shots. So obviously, you know, the Oilers had quite the push early in the second period. And, you know, I think the physicality and the way the Jets played defensively, they were talking about this. Kevin Bieksa was talking about this on the broadcast. Clearly the Jets were, you know, going back into a bit of a, you know, prevent defense, right? Like, you could tell that they were sacrificing offense and basically just trying not to give the Oilers anything in the neutral zone, give them no odd man rushes. And really, you know, they didn't really give that many odd man rushes throughout the game. So overall, it was a pretty good defensive effort. It wasn't perfect, right, Dave? Like, you know, there were points of that game where you would say, okay, well, especially when McDavid and Draisaitl were put together in that third period, you know, there were some, you know, moments in that game where you thought, okay, you know, like, here comes the push, they're going to tie this game up. But for the most part, you know, Draisaitl had four shots. I thought he was dangerous all night long. Jesse Puljujärvi, we have to talk about as well. I mean, he was not just the goal, but, you know, he was dangerous all night long. But, you know, the Jets have Tucker Poolman now on that third pair with Logan Stanley. And obviously those guys are the top offensive defensemen in the NHL, right? Contributing on the score sheet. Obviously I'm joking, but, you know, we know that Logan Stanley's got that shot. And, you know, Dave, you mentioned this many times towards the end of the regular season, Poolman is better suited in a third pairing role. And, you know, the results speak for themselves.
And, you know, Desi, I sorry, Drew, just quickly, I was going to say, I went back and I looked at my notes because I was curious to see what that pairing of Stanley and Pullman had done previously. And someone tweeted at me saying they played 56 minutes together in the NHL, but they had 29 games as the first pairing for the Manitoba Moose in the 2018-19 season. And I think that I joked, I said, well, you know, they'll have a lot of muscle memory. They'll have a lot of familiarity. They'll be okay. And again, I've always been a Pullman booster in the sense that I think Tucker Pullman is perfectly suited for a third pairing role. So if you put him there, you're giving him an opportunity to be successful. That's where he'll be able to do that. And again, I thought he was good. I thought, and especially considering he hasn't played in, you know, quite some time, and it was kind of a mystery, right? We didn't really know exactly what was going on with him, but you know, there he is, he's back in. And again, I like that comfort that he and Logan Stanley have together. And it works, right? Like it worked well for the Jets. So I'm with you, as I thought it was a good opportunity to get those guys comfortable and feeling good about their game. Well,
and you know, Drew, I know you want to get in here, but you know, you saw
you guys, I might just go, you know, have a snack or something. You guys are going right.
Yeah, have a snack, have a sandwich. But you know, we talked about that. One of the reasons why we thought, you know, Pullman might be more successful, Dave, in that third pairing role, I should say, is because as opposed to, you know, maybe focusing a little bit more on, you know, the shutdown defense, his offensive game could flourish, right? And that's saw it in the first period, right? Pullman had a really good chance in the first period. So it's not like it was just that goal where it wasn't just flashes. Like Pullman had a really good game. I think he really stood out. Same thing with Stanley, right? Like, you know, these guys aren't, you know, playing 25 minutes a night, but in a third pairing role, they were very solid against the Oilers. So the key thing here is, You got the first win without Ehlers and Dubois. We don't know if they're going to be ready on Friday for game two, but at this point, guys, that's all you can ask for.
Yeah, you know, everything that you had tonight, look, you're not icing your best lineup tonight. You get down early, or you give up the first goal. You don't get down early, but you get down early in the second period. You give up the first goal, and your offense is coming from unlikely sources. So this isn't the Jets, you know, typical offensive, you know, superstars. Forget about the fact that they scored into the empty net. But, I mean, you're getting Tucker Pullman gets the first goal because he's aggressive and he has a strong net drive, and Blake Wheeler, you know, has a good shot on goal. But Mike Smith has to gather that rebound. That's a weak goal to let in by Mike Smith for the Oilers, because the shot from Wheeler wasn't anything to write home about. That should be covered without a lot of difficulty.
It was a juicy rebound for sure.
It was a juicy rebound. Pullman, in this instance, you know, for a Jets team that often wasn't aggressive offensively, and that was clearly the strategy tonight, was certainly more to be more defensively conscious. In that time, it was good timing for Pullman to charge hard at that rebound, and he gets rewarded. So, boom, second period, the Jets haven't played that well in the second period. They've given up the goal, and they get it back, and they get it back pretty quickly. And they get it back without having to change how they're playing. It's not like they have to alter their style, as you know, and start sacrificing things defensively to get back into the game. They get a, you know, a 5-on-5 goal, 1-all. Third period starts, that opening shift right off the third period. It's an offensive zone shift for the Jets top line against McDavid. And we know that entering tonight's game, mea culpa right up here. I was the one who said, anytime that the Jets top line is against McDavid's top line, that's not a good matchup for the Jets. Well, today the Jets top line certainly was as decent against the McDavid line as you can expect. Now, I mean, if you look at the Corsi 4 in this game, it's tremendously one-sided. But Connor McDavid, in terms of shutting down Connor McDavid, this is as shut down as he has been all season long, and certainly by a Jets team that couldn't shut him down at all. But then what happens is Logan Stanley gets that very, you know, it's just, we know what Logan Stanley is. He just loves to take shots. He'll take shots from anywhere. And this one, Dominic Toninato, veteran guy, biding his time, you know, gets the stick, you know, free, and has a tremendous tip in the high slot. And all of a sudden it's 2-1 for the Winnipeg Jets, despite the fact that, I'm not going to say they haven't played well, because they did play pretty well. They executed the strategy that they needed to do in order to be competitive and in order to win this game. And what did we say on Saturday? We said on Saturday that the Jets' success is going to come down to attention to detail. And a moment ago, one of you, and I think it was you, as he said, was talking about the Oilers' odd man chances, odd man rushes. I don't think that there were, I mean, I can't really think of any blatant odd man rushes off the top of my head. There certainly weren't any two-on-ones for the Oilers tonight. The only two-on-one that I can really think of was by the Jets, the one towards the end of the first period where Scheifele rifled it high, and then the Connor sort of where it was almost a quasi breakaway, but then Connor tried to drop it back to Scheifele, but Darnell Nurse had come back on the back check. The Jets' attention to detail and execution of their game plan was as good tonight as we've seen in months for this team.
Sure, and I think you have to be concerned. Sorry, you're right, and you have to be a little bit concerned about the lack of offense during, you know, portions of this game, right? Like we talked about the second period, you know, and you're going to have to sacrifice that when you're playing an offensive team like Edmonton, right? Like we know, and specifically big guns, McDavid, Draisaitl, Kaylor Yamamoto, like that's what is something that, you know, we talked about on the Saturday show. Like if you shut down McDavid, you have to deal with Draisaitl. If you shut down Draisaitl, you have to deal with Puljujarvi and Yamamoto, and the like Alex Chiasson has been successful against the Jets this year. Like obviously Chiasson guys isn't a player you're going to game plan around, but the point is this Oilers team is good, right? And it's mainly because of McDavid and Draisaitl, but you have to give them credit. They have some good players. Like even a guy like James Neal, Zach Cassian, like they were throwing their weight around. Like these are obviously, you know, players that you don't expect to score on a nightly basis. But I agree with you. I mean, they did execute. The physicality was something I don't think we saw as much during the season. And obviously Logan Stanley helps. And, you know, Adam Lowry is one of those guys that definitely stepped up big time physically. And, you know, we had a commenter, Brent, talk about Vesalainen. And I thought he had a really solid game. And like, that's another thing, right, guys, going into this game. First off, we didn't necessarily a week ago expect Vesalainen to be in the starting lineup. He's on the second line. He didn't look out of place, right? Like he had a couple shots on net. He had a good scoring chance with Toninato in the first period, Dave. So, you know, good for Vesalainen. And then, sure, if Dubois comes back or Ehlers comes back, there's a good chance that the first two guys that come out are Toninato and Vesalainen. But, you know, give them credit here, right? Like Toninato doesn't have a lot of playoff experience. He has a few games with the Panthers. Also funny to note that he was picked, I think, four spots ahead of Hellebuck in that 2012 draft, Dave. Kind of funny how that works out, right? And they end up playing on the same team. But yeah, I think, you know, the depth players, the guys that you didn't expect to really contribute at this time of the season, were contributing. And that's pretty awesome if you're the Jets without, you know, two of your top players in the top six.
Well, Izzy, you know what? And I think it's what we've talked about throughout the course of the year is that you have to put players in the roles that they're best suited for. So Christian Vesalainen is better suited to be on a second line wing position because he's a scorer who's got a great shot and has a lot of talent. And so to me, he would be the type of player that you'd want to have in that elevated role. Do you have him on a fourth line checking role? Ideally, not really. I mean, that's a Dominic Toninato. Jansen Harkins, because of his ability, because of the way he processes the game, you can play him up and down the lineup. He's got that. He's a little more versatile. He's a little bit more like Andrew Kopp in that regard than a Christian Vesalainen. I'm not suggesting Vesalainen is one-dimensional because I think his game's been very good. I'm just thinking that, you know, if you want to give him that opportunity for success, that's the role you want to find him in. So I mean, again, I liked his game. I thought he was, he's a young guy who there was a lot of pressure on him, right? Because a lot of people kind of gave him this, kind of wrote him off when he went back to Finland and then he came back. But Pascal Vincent will tell you, he came back with the right attitude and he adjusted to the North American game. And you see it in his game, right? You see that in a different style than what we saw previously. So Christian Vesalainen, again, is a player I like, in that elevated role as opposed to trying to stick him onto a fourth line and hope that he'll develop that checkers mentality. Again, we saw it, but now I'm self-conscious of saying "and again" because someone mentioned in the chat. They said, "What's the over under of me saying "and again"?" And now I'm self-conscious of it. I said, "Now you're making me self-conscious," and they did exactly that. You're in my head. You're in my head. Get out.
You're living rent free between your ears, there, Mr. Minook. Good evening to everybody joining us. Welcome to the Illegal Curve post game show. We're talking about the Winnipeg Jets 4-1 victory over the Edmonton Oilers in tonight's game one, round one of the playoff series. A very impressive victory for the Winnipeg Jets, almost adopting a whole new style, a whole new approach in tonight's contest. This was a physical a physical game and the Jets demonstrating a level of physicality that we have not seen from them at all this season. I mean, or even going back to last year, remember in the first, in the play-in series against the Calgary Flames, the Jets were you know, sort of beat up and run out off the rink by the Flames. Not tonight. The Jets coming out very early, setting the tone with a lot of physicality that I thought carried over throughout the entirety of the game. And, you know, we talk again, we say it's a little bit of a broken record that what I sound like here, but on Saturday, what did we talk about? We're going to be the keys for the Winnipeg Jets. Five-man unit playing defense, and they certainly were that tonight. You saw forwards, really. Oftentimes the Jets had three forwards lined up at their own blue line to try and prevent the Oilers from gaining the zone with speed. And then we also had the attention to detail. This wasn't a game where the Jets, when they had to dump it in, dumped it in such a manner that Mike Smith could get it up to the defenseman out of the zone before the Jets had a chance to establish any zone time. The dump-ins were smarter. Just the fine tuning of the Jets game was smarter tonight than we'd seen for a lot of weeks previously. And I do believe that an element of that had to do with the fact that it was clear they were going to be a playoff team and the regular season sort of became a slog. Whereas now that it's playoffs and, you know, the stakes are even higher, they sort of were able to get back to those little things that they were doing right at the beginning of the year, at least in game one tonight against the Oilers.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we have some people in the chat talking about, you know, how, you know, Montreal was able to do that as well. Montreal's obviously got some physical players, but you're right, Drew. I mean, this is not a game plan that I think we've seen a lot from this Jets team, but it's something, and we saw it, you know, it kind of tailed off, right, guys, in the second period. Like, there wasn't the same, I think the Jets had something like, what was it, 30 hits? Like, it was something ridiculous in that first period, and it was like something like 13 or 14 players, different players had hits in the first period, right? So, obviously, you know, that's not sustainable. Kind of reminds you of, like, you know, when Team Canada would come out in the World Juniors, right? And everybody just everybody was getting a hit in, right? So that, you know, that changed a little bit in the second period, and I think the Oilers adjusted, and you can tell that they were trying to work it down low a little bit more. And, you know, they obviously have players that can do that. And I talked about this earlier, but, you know, Dreisaitl is one of those guys. It reminds me, guys, a lot of Crosby and Malkin, right? Like, Crosby gets more of the headlines, but then you realize, like, Malkin is also going to be a future Hall of Famer, right? Like, well, without Malkin, they wouldn't have won those three Stanley Cups.
Sorry, to continue on that analogy, though, Ezzy, where you mentioned sort of the Crosby-Malkin, and Crosby, you know, flashier than Malkin, McDavid flashier than Dreisaitl. Dreisaitl plays with that edge and that physical, the physicality to his game, and Malkin also, I mean, plays with an edge that you sort of goes unrealized because he's, you know, he always puts up the big goal totals, the big point totals. Dreisaitl, I mean, he's a big boy. I mean, you know, you sort of forget how big Dreisaitl is until that there was that sequence where he fell on Neil Pionk. And I had to sort of go back and watch it on the replay there for a second. It almost like Pionk was enveloped by Dreisaitl on the ice, because Dreisaitl's, you know, what is he, 6'3", 6'4", something like that. And he's, you know, thick now. And so I think that aspect, and so when they fell over each other, it's sort of funny that he was lying on Pionk, and it's like, what happened to Neil Pionk there for a minute? But, you know, I think it goes to that sort of the physical nature. I wonder if the Oilers in game two, when they look at their adjustments, are going to try and maybe match the Jets' physicality a little bit more and try, because the Jets aren't a big team, you know, usually. A lot of the guys who are throwing hits for the Jets are undersized. Neil Pionk, I mean, is not a big guy, but he plays a big, like a big style himself, game. Though. He can certainly handle himself, no question. But I mean, go rewatch, and I will obviously before Friday, go rewatch the first 10 minutes of that game. The Jets hit absolutely everything that moved. And, you know, I'm trying to think the last time we sort of saw a Jets team that hit everything like that is the first time they made the playoffs against the Anaheim Ducks. Remember that season, how physical the Jets were, where basically their entire MO was finishing every check? And it worked, obviously, until they ran into the Ducks and got swept out very quickly, very easily.
Well, those games were all close. I mean, they were in those games, if you remember.
They were in those games, absolutely. I mean, there was,
it wasn't as if they got, like, you know, it wasn't like they were demolished 4-0 every single game.
No. Shout it's out not to like Emerson, what's happening. Yeah,
remember
it's
that
not like what's happening to.
Yeah, you're right, Ezzy.
Well, that was the. Wasn't that the overtime winner, or was that game three that he?
I thought it was game four that Edom scored that beautiful goal.
Yeah, I remember that the Jets
also opened shout the scoring. Out to the party dangle.
Well, I was going to say Adam Pardy opened the scoring in that series for the Jets back in the, when the, in game one on the wraparound coming walking down the boards against the Anaheim Ducks. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about the Oilers game tonight against the Jets. And you know, it was just a complete team effort. It was much more reminiscent of the Jets from earlier this season. The Jets team that sort of had their identity and they had their the style of play that they needed to play in order to win, and they were able to recapture it tonight after really, you know, as you know, to quote Paul Stastny, after cheating the game for so long at different points of time in the season, tonight they were able to get back to what made them successful earlier in the year.
Yeah, and again, that's one of those things that you needed to see from this Jets team. You needed to see what they were able to do against an Oilers team, right? You saw them against the Canucks, and you saw them against a Leafs team that didn't have Marner, didn't really necessarily want to, you know, Austin Matthews, what did he play in that first period against the Jets? It wasn't exactly a playoff like team that was looking like they were really ready to go all out and play a playoff game. That's what we saw tonight. That's what you were going to get. You're going to get an Edmonton Oilers team that wanted to have a good effort. Because remember, guys, what happened to the Oilers against Chicago last year?
Paul Maurice flamed out.
That's right. And Paul Maurice was asked about that. He was asked, I think Jeff Hamilton asked that question today in the morning availability. And he said, you know, did you guys go back and watch to learn anything? Paul Maurice's point was that, you know, there was very little value because this team was different. I'm like, well, the team's different, sure. But, you know, a lot of the players are still the same. And, you know, talking about that muscle memory between Logan Stanley and Tucker Pullman, this is an Oilers team that has a lot to prove. I mean, this is a team that when you lose the first game in your building, there's an advantage, I think, again, for the Jets to be able to have gone on the road and remove that element. I mean, you don't have the fans, so it's not the same pressure. But still, you're on the road. You get to be together as a team. And everyone expects you to get your ass kicked by the Oilers. Not everyone. I mean, Ezzy and I both picked the Jets to win this series, so it's not we're not gonna pretend like we're surprised. Hashtag no big deal. But the point is that the pressure I thought actually was on the especially without Nikolaj Ehlers and Pierre-Luc Dubois. So when the Jets didn't have those two key elements to their lineup, I mean, how many people were saying the Jets are done, it's over? I mean, people tried to thread the line to be a little respectful. But the truth is, a lot of people were saying that this series was done because, you know, to start the series off without two critical pieces put the Jets too far behind the eight ball.
The nobody believes in us factor, I think, you know, and you sort of people and teams, I mean, the teams always tend to use it, and it can't always be have no effect. So I do believe that, to your point there, Dave, that there is an element, and certainly we heard about it in the days leading up to this game from the different Jets, you know, in post-practice media availability saying, you know, don't look at the last month of our body of work as what we are as a team. Go back and look at the first month. Go look back and look at the first couple months. You know, we're a pretty good hockey team, and everybody was, well, you know, you've given up 400 goals to the Oilers and McDavid can single-handedly, you know, skate through the entire team while the Harlem Globetrotters song plays, you know, things like that because he had done it during the regular season. But, I mean, it just goes back to, I think, what you know, this season being such an anomaly and it being so weird that the Jets, when they had their struggles and when they had their collapse and when nothing was working for them on the ice, they still were able to look back. They still had something to fall back on, which was the success earlier in the year and saying, look, this is more of a factor of just the compact schedule and the fact that we're just sort of slogging our way through it. And they were able to almost use that as motivation. And I don't think that the Oilers were arrogant coming into the game because they certainly, I don't think they took the Jets lightly, but I think the Oilers maybe had a little bit of a rude awakening as to the style that the Jets played tonight and that the Jets weren't the pond hockey team that they'd been for so many games against the Oilers this season.
No, it's a good point, Drew, and I think there's way too much experience on this Jets team to let, you know, those seven losses in a row or those, you know, nine losses out of 10, you know, affect them going into the playoffs, right? Because most of these guys were together through that 2018 run, right? Like Scheifele, Connor, Wheeler, Morrissey, Hellebuck, like Lowry, Kopp, all of these guys, there's just way too much experience and talent on this team, right? Like it's not, the Jets were definitely fragile towards the end of the season. There's no doubt about that. But one win can really change the outlook. And obviously, guys, like there's a lot of hockey to be played here in the series. They don't give out the Stanley Cup, you know, after night one. But obviously, stealing game one is huge. And I agree with Dave. Like all of the pressure is on Edmonton. And I think, you know, even though you might look at the Jets as the huge underdog, which a lot of people, you know, had them as a huge underdog going into this series, you know, now all of the pressure is on Edmonton. Because as you mentioned, Dave, Edmonton, Chicago last year, like that was a disaster. And even though most people kind of think when the Oilers have more salary cap in the offseason, that's when they're going to go out and maybe, you know, acquire a big name defenseman. So it's not like the Oilers window closes if they get knocked out in the first round or the second round this year. But I think there is a lot of pressure on this team to go far. Drew's talked about this many times. When you have the top two scorers in the NHL year after year, and you're not able to do anything with it, the first round is not going to be good enough. Like this team wants to go further, you know, whether that's the second round or, you know, the Stanley Cup final. I think it's going to be a huge disappointment if you beat the Jets seven times during the regular season and then you get knocked out in the first round. So obviously there's going to be a big pushback, guys. And we know that it's going to be tough to keep Connor McDavid off the score sheet two games in a row. But, you know, the Jets did have a formula for success in this first game. And regardless if they get both Ehlers and Dubois or just one of them back, you know, I think what we've seen is the Jets want to keep these games lower scoring. They want to keep them physical and they want to make sure that, you know, they're spending less time in their own zone. And aside from that second period where they were hemmed in a bunch of times early on in that second period, I think for the most part, you know, it was a pretty smart game. Like it wasn't high event. You know, you'd like to see some more high danger chances. There's no doubt about that. But I think overall you have to be pretty happy because you, not only did you get the win, but I think it was the manner in which you got the win that's the most important.
So what I was going to say, sorry, Drew, I just want to say quickly. So the Paul Maurice is, and we're going to play out his media availability is going on right now. And he said that for folks asking about Dominic Toninato, he said his assistants pushed harder for Toninato to play tonight, felt he was best equipped to play the style of game that was necessary. And then he added, they were right. So it's interesting that you know, and that's not a slight against Jansen Harkins because we know that Jansen Harkins looked pretty good against the Calgary Flames in game one of the bubble last year. But, you know, that's an interesting tidbit from Paul Maurice in terms of the thought process in going with Dominic Toninato in the lineup tonight. And look, this isn't, as he said it right, the series isn't over because the Jets won. But it's always better to be up 1-0 than to be down 1-0 and nervous because if the Jets can go into Edmonton or stay in Edmonton because they're not leaving, but if they can stay in Edmonton and they can come out with a 2-0 advantage, I mean, that's pretty significant. And look, we joke for those who are of a certain vintage of the history of the Smythe division, but none of these players, like, that doesn't apply anymore. I mean,
they were born yeah, decades after.
Yeah. That. So, I mean, like, while we reference it and stuff like that, I mean, it's not really there's no real, like, linkage between that, and even over and above the fact,
again, even Nate Thompson, Dave, I think he was like 4 years old when Dave Ellett scored that goal.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, there's not really that linkage. You don't have to think there and sit there and go, well, this is what happened back in the day. This is a different era, a different situation. But I like I said, I think it was a positive start because you did a bunch of things that you needed to do. And from the start, I think Drew said it right. The way the Jets started that game was the way they needed to. They came out and they didn't allow Dave Tippett, because Dave Tippett's a great coach. Dave Tippett is a very methodical coach. And I thought that they really didn't allow him to hem them in, and because the Jets played a different style than what we've seen from them traditionally. And I thought they were more responsible. Not always. I mean, there were obviously instances where there were breakdowns, but again,
the Oilers didn't have a shot on net through the first 8 minutes of the game.
That there you go.
Or seven minutes, whatever it was.
Yeah. But I mean, I know, and that's my point, is that I thought the Jets came out the way they needed to, and that allowed them to set a tempo. And even though you're going to get a pushback because the Oilers are a good team and are able to do that with the players that they've got, the Jets were able to reestablish it a bit. And once Tucker Pullman tied that game, what a momentum change, right? It was like you really felt, because, you know, if you're the Jets and you're playing a slightly different style or maybe a completely different style from what you've traditionally done, and the other team scores, and now you're down, and now you're chasing. Well, the default tends to be to go back to what you're used to try and chase the game. But the Jets kind of stayed within that framework, I thought, and it allowed them to tie the game. And, you know, I thought the guys on the broadcast did a good job in between periods breaking down the error on, you know, between Kulikov and who's the other defenseman with Kulikov? Larson. And on the Pullman goal. But that was an instance where, you know, the Jets were able to be rewarded sticking within the framework of what they were doing. And then they could keep it going. So there's that, you know, going back to the first year of psychology, behavior modification, positive reinforcement element of things. Pavlov's, bell going off. The Jets got rewarded, and you end up with the game one victory. And we'll see if you can bring more of the same. And again, we don't know what's going to happen with the lineup, right? We don't know what Nikolaj Ehlers' status is going to be. We don't know what Pierre-Luc Dubois' status is going to be. So there's still some questions coming into Friday night's game, but you put yourself into a good situation.
You've certainly put yourself into a good position, and you've sort of switched where the pressure now lies. You know, this is a Jets team that, given the lineup deficiencies, probably was able to play sort of free and clear today, in the sense that if they lose tonight's game, I mean, assume that they, you know, assume it's a close game and they lose, they can say, well, you know, we did a lot of good things, but we they would never admit it publicly, but we're without two very, you know, key elements to the team. Instead, what happens is they get the win, they do a lot of very good things, and they might get reinforcements afterwards. So now, the pressure certainly shifts from the Jets to the Edmonton Oilers. Again, the goaltending situation, it's not like Mike Smith was bad tonight for the Oilers.
No, but, he was fine.
You know, he was fine, but where they needed him to make saves, I mean, because it's not like the Jets had, you know, ample opportunities. You know, he can't let up, he can't give up that rebound. So, you know, yeah, that was a bad only, rebound to give up. That was
the only of the, well, there were only two goals, obviously, but Toninato's goal was just a nice tip, right? Like,
you're
not going to fault Smith on that. And, you know, we talked about this as well throughout the regular season, right? Like, Smith, even if you try to keep the puck away from him, right, dump it in the corners, just keep it away from him, he's still going to play the puck. And I, as a, you know, Marty Brodeur enthusiast, I love watching Smith because there aren't that many goalies like Pekka-Rinne, even though Rene's not even starting for Nashville now, but you know what I mean, right, Drew?
Yes.
I just love watching Smith play the puck. So you could tell that they were trying to keep the puck away from him as much as possible, but it was just, as you said, it was a game plan that was executed. And, you know, I know that, you know, you have concerns about, you know, some of the scoring chances that you gave up maybe, but they weren't odd man rushes. Like this game that they played defensively was pretty solid. It wasn't perfect. And, you know, the Jets are not going to be mistaken for, you know, the New York Islanders or some of the better defensive teams in the league, Carolina. But when you keep McDavid off the score sheet, when you keep, you know, Draisaitl off the score sheet, and you steal game one, I mean, you're going to be pretty happy with that. So obviously they'll work on some things, you know, between now and Friday, and hopefully they'll get Ehlers or Dubois back, or hopefully both. We don't know. But, you know, I think overall, you know, that game, when you write it up and you want it to go a certain way, you know that, you know, it was pretty close to as good as it could get in game one on the road.
Well, look, I mean, I'm looking at the, you know, courtesy natural stat trick, looking at the 5-on-5 high danger chances. You know, it was 13-8 for the Oilers. But as we just talked about, and as you mentioned there, Ezzy, you know, of those 13 high danger chances for the Oilers, they weren't off the rush for the most part. They weren't odd man rushes. They maybe had some chances or some high danger chances after, you know, grinding the puck down low or whatever, or maybe a goal mouth scramble. I mean, you think the Oilers goal, the Puljujarvi goal, I mean, it's sort of a fluke one that the shot, you know, by, I think it was Tyson Barrie who shot it, if I recall correctly, doesn't get all the way through and it just sort of bounces onto Puljujarvi's stick. So, I mean, you know, that could have just as easily bounced onto a Jets player stick or bounced harmlessly into the corner. So from the Jets defensive strategy perspective, to be able to limit the Oilers off the rush, because that's where they do their most damage. I know you got out-coursed badly, the Jets did. I know the Jets lost the high danger chances battle 13-8, according to the numbers that I'm looking at here. You know, the Jets, given that they have Connor Hellebuck in net, so assume Hellebuck outplays Smith, as he usually is going to do, and the Jets, you know, despite having five fewer high danger chances, they're more opportunistic like they were tonight. Maybe that's enough. Maybe the the Oilers' high danger chances not being off the rush, plus the Hellebuck factor versus Smith, gives the Jets not an advantage, but it gives them a pathway and a game plan to victory on a night in, night out basis. The Jets know that if it's going to be trading chances back and forth, they're not going to be able to beat the Oilers, because that's playing right into McDavid and Draisaitl on what they do best. But if you keep them from being able to gain the zone with speed, and you do, and you take care of your attention to detail in your own zone that way, then you might have an opportunity, and then you can transition and you can be opportunistic when the Jets have a chance, despite having fewer quote unquote high danger chances than the Oilers.
Yeah, Drew, you would rather them beat you with those high low plays, right? Or you'd rather beat them beat you with the point shots and you know, with traffic in front, as opposed to, you know, giving up breakaways to Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. And their speed and physicality more so with Draisaitl, obviously, was noticeable. And we talked about Puljujarvi, like, he had some good scoring chances in addition to the goal that he scored. So you know that the Oilers are going to get scoring chances, but it's what types of scoring chances they get, like you said, which is the most important. And you're right, transition scoring off the rush. I mean, the Jets are obviously a team that also likes to play like that, but they know if they open it up too much, it's not just, you know, going back and forth, but it's giving up those kind of turnovers, right? And that's something that we saw quite a bit between the Jets and the Oilers, those turnovers, right, in the offensive zone. So it's like we talked about earlier, guys, like, you know, this was a pretty impressive victory. Like, when you, like you said, Drew, when you go into this game without one third of your top six, yeah, and you've already lost 7 of the 9 games. And again, you know, that is significant here. You can't minimize that. Like, the Oilers, we talked about it. Connor McDavid had 22 points in 10 games, and you completely shut him out. Yeah, he had a couple good scoring chances, and he looked dangerous on the power play. And it was only one power play. But at the end of the day, that's all that matters. The W for win and 0 for points.
That, you know, you talk about Connor McDavid and how he looks. Like you said, he's always going to have his chances, but that is as mitigated as we've seen Connor McDavid, certainly, you know, by the Jets this year, no question, obviously, given how he torched the team night in and night out. But just, you know, the Jets had a good game plan against, I thought Draisaitl was more dangerous than McDavid for the most part. So, I think that's a good game plan for the Jets. Now, can they recreate it? Can they keep that attention to detail, Dave, for Friday's game too? That is sort of obviously the significant question that we'll have to find out. I mean, I look back last year to what happened to the Oilers and the Blackhawks. The Blackhawks won game 1 6-4 in the qualification round. The Oilers came back and won 6-3 in game 2. And obviously, we know the Blackhawks won game 3 and 4, but the Oilers did bounce back after losing game 1 in the play-in round back in August. So it's going to be very interesting from my perspective to see what kind of Oilers response you're going to see on Friday, and how the Jets can respond to the Oilers' response. You know, what do the Jets...
How are the Oilers going to respond to the Jets' response to the Oilers' response, though? I think that's the big question.
No, and I think that's I think it's a fair point, Drew, but I think if you're the Winnipeg Jets, you don't worry about what the Oilers are planning on doing. You just do what you did tonight. I mean, you created... You want to talk about a game plan or a blueprint? You created a blueprint for success. You know, playoff hockey is different hockey, and we know that. You're not sitting there trading chances, playing fire wagon hockey where you're, you know, although it's funny because I was watching, I think Joe Piscucci put out the 1990 Jets Oilers 7-5 game. So I was watching those highlights. That was some trading chances right there. There was some classic. Yeah,
that was 1980s hockey in a nutshell.
Yeah, 1990. But it was...
Sorry, shout out to Mo Mantha.
Yeah, Mo Mantha had himself a game. But I think it was Pat Olenek too, I think. But the point is that Thomas Dean...
You interrupting yourself now, Dave?
Yeah, I am. I'm excited. To think about all those names. But no, I really do think that you've created something. You have an opportunity. And maybe Paul Maurice has been moving his group towards this. And this has kind of been the game plan with the team, because we knew that you can't play loose hockey and expect to win. You can't play loose against Connor McDavid. You know, and it's, I mean, we did the Moose end of season thing yesterday, had to get that in. And on our YouTube channel, you can watch it anytime you want. No big deal. But the point is that What?
I was going to say, is it also on our website? You can give the website a plug while you're
out. It's also on our website, illegalcurve.com. No big deal. Craig Heisinger, Pascal Vincent, Jets 2017 second round pick, Dylan Sandberg, Jets 2017 third round pick, Johnny Kovacevic, and Jeff Malad, rookie, came out of nowhere, Cornell, but had a good impact. All these guys were rolling along.
Hey, don't forget about Thinker and the Goose.
Well, of course, Austin and Daniel were on, and we were rolling along. And you know, I just got so excited about my moose point. I actually forgot the point. I was just I got so excited to mention the moose thing. I forgot about the point I was trying to make. Oh well, whatever. Anyways, someone else take over. I'm passing the baton. I got too excited.
I'll tell you what, Dave's getting a little excited. So let's all take a deep breath. We still got lots more to come here on the Illegal Curve post game show. We'll run some ads. We'll pay some bills. Much more to come.
Smash the like button. Smash
the like button. If you haven't yet, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Subscribe. Get alerted each and every time we go live here with the Illegal Curve post game show. So everybody hang tight. We'll be right back. Much more Jets talk. The Jets victors game one, 4-1 victors over the Edmonton Oilers. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg. This is the Illegal Curve post game show. We're back with the Illegal Curve post-game show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you on a Wednesday evening. Ezzy's already chuckling to himself. What's so funny there, big boy?
Dave and I are having a little side chat here on the old texter machine. So,
fair enough.
I'll try to keep it together, though, Drew.
Try and be professional. That's all we ever ask from you, or at least your version of professionalism, whatever that might actually be, but that's okay. Anyways, the Jets 4-1 victors tonight over the Edmonton Oilers. The Jets goal scorers, in case you're just joining us, in case you happen to miss the game tonight, the Oilers opened the scoring. It was Jesse Puljujarvi getting the goal in the second period after a scoreless first period for both teams. The Jets were able to respond a couple of minutes later, just under 3 minutes later. Tucker Poolman, his first of the playoffs, his first of the season.
Whoa.
Not quite sure why you have a University of North Dakota Poolman jersey, but anyways, that seems like a good purchase. At least for today, it was a good purchase.
Wait, how do we know it's not a Colton Poolman jersey? And as you're muted.
Thank you.
But how do we know that's not a Colton Poolman jersey?
Or why do you have a Tucker Poolman UND jersey?
Because I'm a big Tucker Poolman fan, and you guys know I go down to UND, well, not this year because of COVID, but our good friend Kyle Kozier, I stay with him and usually go to at least one UND game per year. So I picked up a jersey, and then, you know, I was like, maybe I'll put Poolman on the back because he was a Jet. I've had this jersey for, I think, 5 years. So he wasn't even playing pro yet. He was still with UND. But what's interesting about this jersey is that they didn't have a nickname, if you remember, right? Because they were Fighting Sioux and then Fighting Hawks. So when I bought this jersey, it was just North Dakota, not Fighting Hawks. So big UND fan. Come on. I almost went to law school, Drew, you know, and then obviously I didn't get in because my grades weren't good enough. But
I was going to say, define almost. Yeah, define almost.
It worked out for one of us, right?
Who's the one?
Richie.
I know. I wanted to make sure that everyone knew it wasn't you. Anyways, Tucker Poolman getting his first, not only
of the playoffs, right?
His first of the season at the 11:01 mark of the second period. That tied it up at one all. That's how it ended after 20 minutes, after 40 minutes.
His first playoff goal since he was with the Omaha Lancers in the USHL.
Wow, there you go. Look, going deep. You know, I saw a stat earlier tonight I couldn't believe, that Alex Ovechkin does not have an overtime winner in his career.
I saw
in
that
the playoffs.
Too. Yeah.
Did that not strike you as, like, yes. This is a guy who's got 70 playoff goals in his career and not one overtime winner.
I can tell you what he was. Very angry at his goaltender tonight.
He was very angry at his goaltender tonight.
No, that's, I agree with you, Drew, because he has a really good shot, as you guys know, of beating, passing Gretzky 894, right? He's definitely going to hit 800, and he's going to get very close. We don't know. He's got to probably average, you know, 30 to 35 goals for another 4 or 5 years, right? But yeah, it is surprising. And you remember, because early in his career, they were just dominated. They could never get past Pittsburgh, right?
Mm-hmm. I you know, it just goes to show you that, you know, whoever scores in overtime is very random. There's clearly no rhyme or reason to it. If a guy like Ovechkin does not have a career overtime winner in the playoffs. It was 1-1 after 40 minutes, as I said. Dominic Toninato, you know, the Jets goal scorers. First it's Poolman, then the game-winning goal off the
stick. Minnesota Mafia.
of Dominic Toninato.
I can't show you guys a Toninato Minnesota Duluth jersey. Sorry.
Oh, come on. And you call yourself a professional. Nobody calls you a professional. Logan Stanley gets the assist on the Toninato goal. Stanley with the shot from the point. Toninato with the tip. At first, the play went back up the ice. Nobody knew it was in. And then once you hear the horn, where they blow the play dead, you know that it's a goal for the Jets, and that's what led to the celebrations. If you actually go back and look at the replay, after Toninato's tip, and you know when everyone else started skating back the other way, he had his arms up. He thought he scored, and he turned out to be correct in that, and it ends up being the game-winning goal. Kyle Connor and Blake Wheeler both score into empty nets as well to ice the victory for the Jets, the 4-1 win. You know, you didn't even get to the point, you know, sure the Oilers sort of pushed, but you never really even got to the point where the Jets were desperate in their own zone, because they were just, the Oilers really looked discombobulated a little bit after Smith went to the bench for the extra skater. The Jets just sort of took the puck, and Kyle Connor had a pretty easy shot into the net. He's not going to miss that opportunity. And the Oilers didn't even have an opportunity to gain the zone or establish any possession in the Jets zone, trying to find the equalizer. The Jets really did a very good job all night long stacking up at their own blue line to prevent the Oilers from being able to get clean zone entries, easy zone entries, the power play notwithstanding, because the Oilers get the easiest zone entries on the power play, I think, in the entire NHL.
Well, that power play is just fun to watch, right? Like, yeah, the skill there. And
unless you're defending it.
Yeah, well, the Jets are glad to only give up one of them, that's for sure.
Right. You know, it kind of reminds you a little bit of Tampa Bay, right? Like, it's just like, pick your weapon that you like. Obviously McDavid and Draisaitl, but like Tyson Barrie has just absolutely racked up the points this year. He's made himself a lot of money. It's not really known whether or not he's going to return to Edmonton, but he's probably going to triple his salary, because I think he only made $2 million this year, right, guys? So I mean, there's just so many dangerous options for the Oilers, and it's not like the Jets don't have a good power play, they just didn't get to use it tonight, right? So yeah, I agree with you, Drew. You know, you're talking about stacking, and they were just generally cleaner in their approach through the neutral zone. Like, there's, you know, you often talk about the 1-3-1 and everything like that. Like, all teams in the NHL play a variation of that, and clearly the Jets were sitting back a little bit and not maybe being as aggressive as they have been. And part of that is you don't have Ehlers and Dubois in your lineup, but I think a lot of that, more of it, Dave, has to do with the fact that, you know, you just can't give a player like Connor McDavid, a guy who plays, let's be honest, more than 99% of the rest of the league. Like, he's not a guy that's going to take a 30-second shift, right? Like, he's going to take a longer shift than your average forward. And you just, and why I bring that up is because you know that, you know, he might not get going in the neutral zone or in his own zone and beat you, you know, the first time around, but you know, you always have to worry about him. There's a reason why, you know, he's called a cheat code, because he just, you know, he can just accelerate from standing and just beat you with speed. It doesn't matter really, you know, who's out there. And not just the speed, obviously, it's the combination, it's the hands as well. So yeah, like, overall, I think you have to give the Jets a lot of credit for how they played defensively. Like, we talked about it at the end of the day, you know, they put up, the Oilers put up 35, 36 shots, whatever it was. But you know, a lot of those shots were not of the high danger, you know, variety, you know, especially in the first period. They had 6 shots on net. And only one shot through the first, whatever it was, 8 or 9 minutes of the game. So you have to be pretty happy with how you played. The one thing that I'm the most concerned about probably is you didn't see, like, Scheifele, Connor, Wheeler, they had a solid game. Stastny also had a really solid defensive game. But
defensively, he was very sharp. You can't
really pick out one line, guys, and say, you know, that line was, you know, really dangerous offensively. And that can't continue. You might be able to win a game, Dave, or a couple games. But, you know, you're going to have to, you know, turn it up a little bit offensively as this series progresses.
But, well, hang on, though, Ezzy. But, you know, I agree to an extent.
You can't win every game 2-1, Drew.
Well, I agree to an extent, because if the Jets open it up too much, if they start sacrificing defense for offense, they're definitely not going to win. That's not a win. That's not a trade that they can make and expect to be successful on. I do think that their approach needs to be defense first. Now, if they were to go defense first and then get behind by a goal or two goals, then obviously you have to change your approach. Mm-hmm. But for Friday's game two, I would expect that the strategy for the Jets is still very similar, despite the fact that I agree, you know, the offense. You know, look, you get the Tucker Pool. You're not going to expect Tucker Poolman to score, you know, a goal like that. You're not going to expect Dominic Tananato to score a goal like that again either. I mean, you know, if that's all these guys have scored in the entirety of the series, then you're fine with that because you don't expect anything from them offensively. You can't all of a sudden start, you know, getting your high danger chances. I see, you know, Energy Design 21 over here is talking about high danger chances. As we mentioned before, the Jets can't all of a sudden get their high danger chances up at 15 for the game if that means the Oilers' high danger chances are going to be up at 25. You just can't sacrifice the defensive side for the offense that much. For the Jets to be successful, they're going to have to grind it out. They're going to have to win these, you know, low scoring 2-1 games and rely on Connor Hellebuck to be better than Mike Smith, like he was tonight.
I mean, I think we said it, or I said it earlier, and Matt, I agree with Matt. They created a blueprint. I mean, you don't say, well, we were successful, let's go away from what we just did to mm-hmm. win the game. You know, I agree with Ezzie. You have to have some offense, of course. But if you're the Jets and you think to yourself, you didn't have Nikolaj Ehlers, who we all agree is the most dynamic player on this Jets team, and you don't have Pierre-Luc Dubois, who is a playoff, I don't want to say monster, but he did very well in the playoffs against the Toronto Maple Leafs last year, which is what obviously a lot of people are hoping he would do for the Winnipeg Jets. So if you're missing two players who are key elements, as you guys said, two of your top six guys, but you've created a blueprint with which you're able to have success, and you had guys who bought in, and everyone seemed to play that style successfully, wait for your opportunities, and then when you do get them, take advantage. I wouldn't go and reinvent the wheel because the Jets have flaws in their game. I'm not here to point out all of them, but the point is you found something that allowed you to gain an edge on a team that you had no edge against all year. As he said, Connor McDavid, 22 points in 10 games against the Winnipeg Jets, right?
Nine games.
Well, as he said, 10, but it was 9. So nine games.
I added a game in there.
Yeah, there you go. But it was 7
games. I need some Fireball, Dave.
We'll get you some. We'll ask the folks at Seagram's. We'll get you some of that Fireball, Ezzie. But the point is you did something against a guy that you haven't been able to do the entire season. Think about that. This is a guy who is the super freak, the guy who was able to do – to the north, and Palmer's talked about this today in his availability. You know, he was asked about what I don't remember who asked the question, but that idea of going back, because when I looked at McDavid's year, because I was curious to see some of the numbers for him, I think the Habs and the Flames were the only two teams that had in three of their games that shut him out and had him. Now he got points against them still, but they had three games against him each. Where he was held off the score sheet. So, and Palmer said, you know, they went and they looked at the teams that were successful against McDavid. What did they do? So he obviously watched what the Flames did. He obviously watched, and I watched one Calgary-Edmonton game this season, and Calgary hit McDavid a lot. You know, they didn't give him that time and space. What I said at the beginning of this show, I stick to. I think Neil Pionk is such a good, you know, offset for Connor McDavid. He just seemed to be in his face so much and under his skin. And just, you know, there was that one play, I don't remember if it was in the first or second, where he finished the check on McDavid and then just stuck with him and didn't allow McDavid to kind of set up and get some space. And that to me is what the Jets needed to do. So if I'm the Jets, and again, we don't know what the lineup's going to look like on Friday, but if you're the Jets, you don't really deviate significantly from what brought you success.
Certainly on the defensive approach. And now if you were able to get a guy like Ehlers back in the lineup on Friday, I mean, Ehlers is, as you said, Dave, he's the Jets' most dynamic player. You know, I don't know that he's not the Jets' best goal scorer. That's still Kyle Connor. But if you had to say, you know, in a one-on-one battle, who's the most dynamic, it would be Nikolaj Ehlers for the Jets. If they're able to get him back in the lineup, then, you know, he just adds another element. He adds maybe that offensive element you were talking about, Ezzie, where he can single-handedly or, you know, flip the ice. If the Jets are hemmed in their own zone, Nikolaj Ehlers, you know, he gained some speed, whatever might happen, you know, to get the puck out of their own zone. If he can do that, you know, just carry it where the Jets don't have a lot of guys who can just carry the puck out of trouble. So if all of a sudden you get Nikolaj Ehlers back and you add his offensive element and his offensive skill set, but at the same time you keep your same defensive mindset and you keep your same defensive responsibility, well, that is certainly a exciting addition to the Winnipeg Jets approach to the game. Now, I don't know that Nikolaj Ehlers is going to play on Friday. If I was a betting man right now, I would say the Jets know either, Drew. I don't think the Jets know either. I agree. I think that Ehlers, my hunch right now, and this is strictly me with a hunch, is that Ehlers will be in the lineup before Dubois, simply because obviously Dubois is the first time we've seen him back on the ice since that game against Toronto, the last regular season game where he got injured. So I would not be surprised if Ehlers is back in the lineup for Friday's game. I would be surprised if Dubois is back, but we'll see. Obviously tomorrow, the team planning on practicing sometime in the sort of late morning, if I'm not mistaken, Dave, you would know better than I would off the top of your head what time. I think it's maybe 12:30 Central Time, 11:30 Mountain tomorrow for the practice, something like that.
I was going to say that the problem is I always get the Mountain Time wrong. Even today. I had it wrong. I'm not entirely certain here. I'm looking at it right now to find out. I'll give you the
Arizona always screws me up, right? Because part of it is Mountain.
It's 12 p.m. 12 p.m. Mountain Time, so 1 p.m. here.
1 p.m. our time. So then you'll have a better idea about the Jets. Any potential additions to the Jets roster, anybody, of course, who's banged up in tonight's game, because there were a number of, look, Dylan DeMello got absolutely run over by Josh Archibald. You know, that was in the first period. Yes. You know, so I think a lot of people were holding their breath that maybe Dylan DeMello might not necessarily be able to bounce back and rejoin the game as quickly as he did. And obviously, he looked fine for the rest of the game, but who knows what, you know, what the adrenaline wears off, who knows how he's actually going to feel tomorrow. But, you know, that was certainly a big hit. There was a physical game. I mean, Josh Morrissey blocked the shot, if I recall correctly, with his off his foot, maybe at a point during the game. And he was sort of slow to get to the bench, if I'm not mistaken. You know, so obviously you have no idea what the injuries, what the effect of any of a more physical game could have on the Jets lineup ahead of game two on Friday night. But they're certainly feeling good about themselves having won game one and having done so with a pretty good third period effort. I mean, really, you know, the first 10 minutes of that third period, right from that first shift in the third period, the Jets were the better team and they eventually got the what turned out to be the game-winning goal off the Toninato tip. Say that 10 times fast, by the way.
Right. And, you know, exactly. And when you go back to, you know, your previous comment about Ehlers, it allows you to be more aggressive, right? And having Dubois helps as well. But because of Ehlers' speed, because of what he's able to do offensively, he's able to basically, you know, circle back and do circles in the offensive zone. You know, and that goes back to what I was saying before about, you know, how many offensive chances the Jets had. And obviously, I'm not suggesting, guys, that the Jets are going to change their approach, because why would you? It was successful in game one. I'm just saying that I don't know how sustainable it is in a seven-game series when you have that much of a game in which you weren't generating enough offensively. That's all I'm saying. Like, at a certain point, if the Jets are going to win this series, Scheifele, Connor, and Wheeler are going to have to be more of a factor. And I'm not talking, the empty net goals to me don't count. Like, I'm talking about, you know, throughout the course of the game. And obviously, you know, they were pretty solid and Wheeler factored in big time on the Tucker Poolman goal, Dave. But what I'm talking about is, aside from, you know, that first period, and, you know, we haven't really talked a lot about, you know, the third line. And, you know, I thought Appleton had a solid game, Lowry solid game. You know, obviously those guys weren't needed, you know, too much on special teams, but you're going to have a little bit more sustained pressure. Like, you're going to have, you know, the first line has a good shift and that's followed up by, you know, the Stastny line having a good shift. And then Kopp, Lowry, Appleton, or, you know, Lowry, Appleton, Perreault, they come out and they have a solid shift. That's what you have to see, you know, if the Jets are going to win this series. Yes, it worked for one game. But I don't think you're going to necessarily be able to get away, you know, with low event hockey like we saw, you know, for a big part of this game.
I do have to offer I made an error. I said this was Tucker Poolman's first goal since his his days with the Omaha Lancers of the USHL. But our good friend Brad Elliott Schlossman of the Grand Forks Herald, who I should have known to ask beforehand, he came in with a correction. He told me that Tucker scored in the 2016 NCAA first round game against Northeastern in Cincinnati. So I was incorrect.
How did you forget about that, Dave?
I wasn't watching that game.
We all remember that. Drew remembered that. We were talking about that before the game. Come on.
But
we do a post game show after that?
Yeah, we did. We did an hour post game show just about the Tucker Pullman goal.
Yeah. We're doing an hour plus post game show about tonight's Tucker Pullman goal. An hour and 7 minutes so far. We'll keep it going. Wednesday evening. Nice to see so many of you. This is the Illegal Curve post game show. If you're just joining us, we go live after each and every Winnipeg Jets game, regular season game, and of course now into the playoffs. And so Friday night we'll be back here right around the same time, about 10:30. By the way, what happens if there's overtime?
Dear mama.
Well, if there's going to be overtime, hope there's no overtime on Monday, because Monday's a late game.
Friday we might be going right into our Saturday show.
That's true.
There's a lot of overtime.
That would be an IC first if we just rolled the post game show into the Saturday show.
Interesting happenings. You're going to hear about this. Nazem Kadri, he just absolutely knocked Justin Falk out with a hit to the head. He's going to get suspended because it's the playoffs, and Nazem Kadri loves getting suspended in the playoffs. An absolutely dirty blindside hit. It looks like it's a 5-minute major and a match penalty, if I'm seeing that correctly, for Nazem Kadri for a hit on Justin Falk. So Kadri just can't help but hurting his own team come playoff time.
Falk out of him.
Might not matter, though, because the Avalanche might sweep that series.
They are, but I mean, Justin Falk is a bad hit. I mean, this is a
really bad hit. What are you watching a bad hit for? You should be paying attention.
Put it up on the screen, Drew. Nobody can see it.
We're violating any YouTube rules at that point.
I just watched it. It's pretty bad.
We don't want to do that. This is a Jets.
I'd say that's 2 games minimum, maybe 3.
Well, he's got a history, of course, so that'll be interesting and something to look for after our post game show comes to a conclusion. You can, if you want, you can watch Nazem Kadri being stupid yet again. This is from my perspective, a very good night for the Winnipeg Jets.
They won the game, didn't they? Win the game, Drew?
Wouldn't that mean they did win the game? Well, there's our buddy Scotty Billick joining us in the chat room now. I'm not sure which one of us he's saying.
I agree with Scotty. Solid shirt. You said you got it from the Bay, right? Did you buy it though during Bay Days? Like, did you get a nice little deal?
I'm not made of Ginsburg money. I only buy things during Bay Days. Come on, I can't buy off the rack. This is I can only afford.
I have absolutely no money.
Hey, he's just
here. Yeah, Scotty Billick. I like it.
Well, somebody send Scotty the link. He can jump on with us if he wants. If somebody's going to look at these numbers after tonight's game and say, how did the Jets win? You're going to look at the advanced stats, you're going to look at the analytics, and you're going to say, well, this was as one-sided as one-sided can be. And, I think that would be a misleading way of looking at the game. Yes, the Jets absolutely got dominated analytics-wise, but this is how the Jets win games. They're opportunistic. They don't win the possession battle very often, if ever. I mean, how many games this year did the Jets win the possession battle? How many games this year did the Jets have more high danger chances than their opponents? Probably more often than not, they didn't. They're opportunistic. They were opportunistic tonight. They relied on good goaltending. Normally, they rely on a good power play. Clearly, that wasn't an issue tonight because they didn't even have one power play opportunity at all. So, this is the Jets winning on their terms, winning in how they want to see the game. And anytime that you can dictate to your opponent how the game is played, I think you're usually in a pretty good position. And that is what happened for the Winnipeg Jets, I think, in tonight's contest. Going to wrap up with our final thoughts from tonight's contest, the Jets with the 4-1 victory over the Edmonton Oilers. Remind everybody, Friday night we'll be back here to do a post-game show for Game 2 of the Jets and the Oilers, and then Saturday morning, of course, we'll be back with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. So plenty of us over the next 24 to 48 hours. Never mind the back-to-back.
Sorry, I was just going to say, Scott is back in the chat. Sorry, this has been fun. I just love it that we just kicked him out and he's still in the chat. I gotta love it. Scotty's a beauty. Love him.
Scotty is a beauty. It's a good group of guys. Top notch all around.
Like Troy Stevens. Yeah, that's a good comment. You guys are like Billy, Sammy, and Dylan. Lots of talent, but don't get much ice time.
give me some final thoughts before we wrap this up, and I can go
send Troy the link. Let's get Troy in here.
It's long past my bedtime.
I've never met Troy, but I like him.
It looks like Huss is in the chat too with their Winnipeg Sports Talk. Huss is in the chat as well. We should have sent Huss the link. Then a really good bit of party.
Want me to send Huss the link? I can send him.
Save it for Friday. It's late. I'm ready for bed.
Huss wants to join us on Friday. He can.
Yeah, exactly.
Final thoughts?
Give me something. Or don't. Or just let me finish. Let me wrap the show. It's up to you.
Well, this segment of the show is sponsored by Fireball Whiskey. You can get Fireball Whiskey at your local liquor marts. Fireball Whiskey.
Yeah, also Seagram's 83, Seagram's 88. We have links on illegalcurve.com. You get some discounts, in fact, actually.
Drew, you really expect us to say anything intelligent at 12:20?
I don't expect you to say anything intelligent at 8:20.
I was going to tell people, because, of course, we've got to be promoting it, is that if you didn't get a chance to join us live for the Manitoba Moose end of season roundtable, which featured myself and Daniel Fink and Austin Saragusa of the Manitoba Moose, we had a really good chat with head coach Pascal Vincent, GM Craig Heisinger, as well as three players, Dylan Sandberg, Johnny Kovacevic, and Jeff Mellott. Really good insight. They all had different things to say about probably the most unique season we'll ever witness in the AHL. Hopefully it's the only one of its kind and things get back to normal. But, you know, we ran a two-hour show yesterday, and it was a lot of fun to do.
You did a great job, Dave. I tuned in for a big part of it, and it was awesome.
I appreciate that. Thanks, Ezzy. And you know what? It was just, like I said, I just thought they provided some really good insight. So we've got that available on illegalcurve.com. You can watch on our YouTube channel. And I condensed the podcast, so it's only the interviews. So if you want to hear from those guys, like I said, those are two players who people would expect to be potentially your right and left side pairing, potentially, in Kovacevic and Sandberg. And Zinger is it gives you the unvarnished truth about it had some really interesting things to say, called Ville Heinola the best player in the AHL during his games with Moose. So I thought it was really good. I thought they provided a lot of insight, and Pascal Vincent always does what he does, which is gives you a lot of insight into the way his team is running. So if you get a chance, you should go check that out, like I said, on our YouTube channel, or you can download it on our iTunes channel as well.
And Drew, I only got one final thought, because we have, I think, around 366 people watching right now. There's still time. Hit that like button. We're over 400 likes. If you're not subscribed and you like the show, subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you don't like the show, then I guess you're not going to subscribe, but definitely smash the subscribe button, hit the like button. And, you know, it was fun doing the show tonight, almost 2 hours. We had Scotty Billick and Sean Reynolds jump on. It was lots of fun. Looking forward to doing it on Friday, boys.
There you go. Very well said, Ezzy. Want to give a shout out to our sponsors, as Dave mentioned, Seagram's, of course, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and our friends at Boston Pizza. Support these fine local businesses because they support the Legal Curve Hockey, and they make this show a possibility. If you want more Jets and Oilers post-game conversation, head over to the Kenny and Rennie YouTube page. They're going to get started along with Mr. Flutie himself, Scott Billick. So the Kenny, Rennie, and
Flutie. Not Doug.
Not Doug, no. Kenny, Rennie, and Flutie, they're going to get started over there momentarily if they haven't already done so. We will be back Friday night for the post-game show after the Jets and the Oilers game 2. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Get alerted each and every time we go live here on YouTube. Give us a thumbs up, smash the like button, all that good stuff. We do it so that you guys have somewhere to talk about and come together to talk about the Jets game. And really, if it wasn't for the audience and if it wasn't for our sponsors, we wouldn't be able to do this. So thank you so much to everybody who's joined us for over an hour and 45 minutes. So probably our longest post-game show as of yet. And it's probably only going to get longer as the playoffs ratchet up and the intensity continues to increase. For Sean Reynolds and Scott Billick, who joined us earlier, for Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I am your host, Drew Mindell. Until Friday, right around 10:40 p.m. and the post-game show for Game 2, we wish you good night and good luck. And thanks for watching the Illegal Curve post-game show.